Welcome back to episode 2 of Renewed Thinking, a really cool podcast, in my humble opinion. I might be a little bit biased since I was featured on the first episode in conversation with Victor Snyders, a man who has a thought or two about the way that the world is going in terms of business, in terms of brand building, in terms of consumer insights and market trends. If you didn't already know, if you missed the first episode, well, this is a thought leadership podcast and a radio feature on Radio Life and Style, featuring unconventional wisdom and fresh insights from the conversations that I'm having with Victor Snyders, CEO of Skin Renewal, and providing fresh-faced and forward-focused perspectives on a whole host of things that are not specific to any one industry. Victor, welcome to you to episode 2, and well done for surviving episode 1.
Thanks, Mike.
You've just touched down here on the KZN North Coast, rushed off here to record a podcast, but you've been jetting around quite prolifically since we last spoke. Where have you just zoomed in from?
Yeah, it's been a crazy time. I went over to the States. I did a podcast in San Francisco with a remarkable lady called Terry Ross, which was very specific to the aesthetic medical industry. And then from there, we made our way across to Las Vegas, and we attended a three-day conference called the Aesthetic Show in Vegas, which was really interesting. I tended to focus more on the business end of things than the clinical side, but very, very interesting 3 days, and then a quick whip through London on the way back to Johannesburg.
Why not?
And that's been the one part of it. And for the last, I would say, 4 weeks since you and I saw each other, I've been swallowing podcasts at a quite frightening rate.
You do your homework, which I appreciate about you. No matter what you're diving into, you like to sort of immerse yourself in the subject at hand. And very good then that we are talking about health, wellness, and beauty after you've just done this international whistle-stop tour and gotten the latest cutting-edge, bleeding-edge insights from the leaders in the field. I mean, your peers. For those that might have skipped the first episode and are just arriving at this thing fresh, how would you describe this interesting ramble of a podcast that we're doing right now?
Well, when you said it was organic, I think that was probably the most accurate thing. These things tend to take on a direction of their own. It's very, very difficult to script them.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you that just from my perspective, the things that I maybe spoke about 4 weeks ago and the inputs that I've had, particularly with regard to what's happening internationally, not only in business, but in politics, the world has changed in 4 weeks. I've been, as I said, consuming a lot of podcasts, probably the best podcast in the world, The Diary of a CEO, who's had some amazing guests. But my poison of choice has been a podcast out of Australia called Inside Aesthetics, which is very specific to the aesthetic industry. And I would say about a third of their podcasts are related to the business end of aesthetics. But that immediately touches on business. And just because it's specific to the aesthetic industry doesn't mean it's not applicable across all sorts of industries.
Well, go figure. I mean, our first episode in this Renewed Thinking podcast, as you said in that first episode, you're in business.
Yeah.
And just by virtue of the fact that you're in business, okay, it is a specific line of work, but the broad strokes principles are going to hold true for most folk in business.
Yeah.
But since you have just arrived back with all of this fresh insights and all of this information that's now stored in your noggin, we want to try and uncork it. And I want to get a sense of the market landscape right now and sort of the current state of global health, wellness, and beauty. And I suppose local as well, because we're living in a connected marketplace, right? So you can't really separate the local from the global as much as you could in the past.
Well, I think it was something historically that we did tend to do. We were quite isolationist in our thinking. This was the market we played in, this was our pool, and this was the pool that we focused on. And it becomes quite difficult to understand where you are when you're only measuring within your own market. So our only exposure to the international market was one or two of the international congresses every year held in Paris and Monte Carlo, sometimes in London. We would see some new technology that was coming out, and we might see some new techniques that were applicable to our doctors. But in essence, it was the South African market that was our focus, with a little bit of input out of the European market.
Okay.
And we made a very conscious decision 2 years ago to broaden our horizons.
That was a deliberate strategy.
It was absolutely deliberate. And we said, we need to see what is going on all over the world, because those are the standards that we should be measuring ourselves against, both in our industry as well as what is affecting business landscapes all over the world. Mm. Because at the end of the day, we're in a business. And we started exposing ourselves very, very deeply to the USA market, where the business aspects of health and wellness play a far more prominent role than in Europe. In Europe, medicine is considered an art and a calling and a culture, and it's very much about the actual treatments, it's about the techniques, and if you're in cosmetic or aesthetic medicine, it's the art of aesthetics. And 90% plus of all the input is related to that and very little to business. Whereas in the USA, probably 50% of the curriculum is geared around business. If you talk to the European doctors about concepts like venture capital and private equity, it's not even on their radar.
Wow.
Whereas in the US, everyone is very aware both of the potential positives and negatives of venture capital and private equity and the way things are being financed. We see distributors acting very differently in the UK to the US, to Australia, to Europe. So for us, it's been very, very interesting because we've been able to pick up ideas, some of which could be applicable to South Africa, some which are not applicable to South Africa because we have different laws, regulations in place. You know, for instance, in South Africa, the only people who can inject neurotoxins and dermal fillers are medical doctors, dentists, plastic surgeons, dermatologists. That's pretty much it. In the UK and in Australia, nurses are allowed to inject.
I didn't know that.
Which has resulted in a very, very different landscape. In the US, it changes from state to state. There are states where only a plastic surgeon or a dermatologist can inject. Same, for instance, in the UAE, in Dubai. A GP cannot just inject a patient unless he's working under the direct supervision of a plastic surgeon or a dermatologist.
Holy moly.
In certain states in America, aestheticians or beauty therapists can't even do very much more than a base entry-level facial and cleaning a face off. They're not even allowed to work with lasers. Whereas in other states in the US, different rules apply. And if you've got a pulse, you're allowed to use that sort of equipment. You'd need virtually no qualification. We see completely different training systems and regulatory systems at play all over the world.
And obviously, you take what is applicable and what is useful and what is interesting and insightful, and you bring it back home, and you've taken a very interesting approach to structuring your business that's put it in its own league, so to speak. How would you sum up the skin renewal approach to health, wellness, beauty, medical aesthetics?
It's very, very difficult to say because this was, you know, sometimes they talk about building an aeroplane while you're flying it.
Yeah.
We started flying without the aeroplane and had to build the aeroplane right around us. I think that we were probably fortunate in that we were very early entrants into this particular industry in South Africa. We were not scared to try things and we were not scared to make mistakes. And I talk mistakes particularly about the structuring of a business where we got a lot of things wrong. Thankfully, we learned to try and keep your mistakes small and make your wins big. But we moved with the industry and as it evolved. And our most recent 2 years has really been geared around that as to how to future-proof your business. because you need to remain relevant. And the world is changing at such a pace. It is actually frightening when you see the amount of change that is taking place. And it's not just the news that is taking place on the front page of the newspaper as to who's being elected. It's far wider than that. The regulatory environments that exist, the trading environments, capital systems, how capital is deployed, how it's sourced, is shifting all over the world. And if you don't stay up to date with all of that, you could very easily find yourself being left behind.
Wow. Looking at all of these factors, these forces that are very much in play at the moment, if you can identify them, if you can appreciate what they are, in any sector, you'll find there's something that you can apply, there's some strategy you can put in place.
Absolutely, but at the same time, also be prepared that tomorrow the rules may change again and you will need to shift again. So one of the absolute critical things for any business to remain relevant in the modern world is flexibility. To be able to adapt, to pivot and change the way you do things quickly and efficiently, because if you don't do that, you can get left behind. It takes one change in rules, it takes one epidemic or pandemic, and all the rules that we know suddenly change. And you've got to be able to survive those things. And adaptability is the key to that.
How valuable for a business operating in South Africa right now is it to keep your ear to the ground and to see what's happening in Europe, in Americas, in Asia? Do you think that because of our place in the connected world, it's never been more crucial? Or do you think that that's sometimes hyped up?
No, I think it's even more crucial. You know, we're for instance seeing within the South African landscape that the trading conditions in terms of consumer interest, consumer ability to spend, as well as the general economic circumstances that exist across, and we operate in Gauteng, in KZN, and the Western Cape. And quite honestly, we're running three totally distinct and different businesses. And we are seeing shifts and trends between those businesses, which we're having to adapt to. Wow. So in the same way as we spoke, there's differences between South Africa and the US and the UK and Australia. There are as many differences between Gauteng, Western Province, and KZN. And once you're able to adapt to international trends, it makes adapting to local trends so much easier.
What were some of the interesting takeaways from your recent international trip in terms of emerging trends or innovations that are driving your industry forward, and that might even have implications for other industries?
I think the biggest things, there's a macroeconomic scenario. The world is dealing with interest rates, something in South Africa we've been used to for a long time. When we announce our annual price increase, the consumer takes it in their stride because they're used to that. Mm. Every year there is an annual price increase. The question is whether it's 5%, 6%, or 8%. But we have lived for a number of decades now with an inflationary aspect to our economies. That was not the case in the US. It was not the case in Europe. It was not the case in Australia, where many of those countries were sitting at annual interest rates of between 0 and 1%. And there was virtually no price fluctuation. And they've suddenly had to start dealing with inflation right from source. So from the wholesale stage, the manufacture stage, and that's been fed through, and they've started doing price increases. And they are suddenly discovering that there is a resistance from the consumer to accepting those price increases. Sometimes the resistance is because the consumer is just offended. Other times that the consumer has not been able to increase their income commensurately with the inflation rates.
Yeah.
And they no longer have the disposable income. So I think that's something that we've seen across all the continents at the moment, is that generally the consumer has less money to spend. Patients are taking longer between treatments. They are spending less per treatment than they were previously. people are under financial pressure. Priorities, school fees, security, medical, rent, mortgage, car, and kids are taking priority, and people have less disposable income to spend. So one has to be able to adapt to that. I think that's a trend that we've seen internationally. Second trend we're seeing internationally, certainly in our space, is an enormous growth in the number of providers. It is generally the barrier to entry to open a aesthetic clinic is very low. If you choose to do it to its fullest extent, whereby you're getting all the technology and the equipment, then the investment can become quite large. But we see many people entering that field just simply because it is so easy to do it. You go on a course, you learn some basics, you buy yourself a syringe, you buy some products, and guess what? You're in business.
Hey.
Open up a page on social media, set up a one-page website, and you're ready to roll. You could set up a business at very, very low cost. Whether that business is going to be successful or not is another thing altogether. But what has happened is that we have seen, because of the demand from the consumer, demand and supply work in an exact way. And as the demand increased, so the supply of doctors and aesthetics providers increased as well.
Rose to meet it.
And there are now far more potential places to go to for a treatment than there were 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So there's increased competition.
Interesting.
Once again, the law of demand and supply kicks in. So as there are more and more providers starting to offer it and supply starts outnumbering demand, you start getting price fluctuations. And then the only way that people can survive in a particular market is to cut the price.
And then it's a race to the bottom.
And then it's a race to the bottom. So we are seeing, and last week in the UK, probably the biggest chain of aesthetic clinics called the SKN Group, which owned Harley Street Medical, ABC Medical, Skin Clinics, had about 80 outlets and about 800-900 employees, went bust.
Wow.
And they closed. The staff were phoned at 10 in the morning, and they were told to close all the clinics, all the branches by 11 o'clock with a notice on the door, we're closed. And that's it. They've gone through business rescue. They couldn't make it. They closed. A few months before that, one of the largest laser clinic groups in the UK, Laser Clinics UK, lost half of its franchisees. We're seeing a similar thing in Australia with Laser Clinics Australia. So for the first time, we're starting to see casualties in our industry. And according to the experts that are there, they're saying now 30% of all clinics that are being started will be bust within a year.
Wow.
Just simply because of the oversupply and that they are not built on good business principles, but they're simply seen as an opportunity to get rich quick. I can promise you one thing, the aesthetics industry, if I wanted to get rich quick, this was the wrong place to be. Because it's taken 20 years of grind to build a sustainable business.
Wow.
And I think this applies to many, many other businesses.
Well, I'm just thinking, post-COVID, when you had a lot of companies folding, a lot of layoffs, you also had the Great Resignation, and you suddenly had a lot of folks starting one-man band marketing companies, social media. We'll do your Facebook and Instagram for you. We'll do videos and photos and graphic design. And it was like there was this flood of freelancers.
The gig economy.
The gig economy. Now, a couple of years down the line, how many of those have weathered the storm and are still going in one shape or another? I think the attrition rate has been massive.
But if you have a look, and the US is a great example, look at the extent of job losses that are actually taking place. A company like Citibank, one of the major banking organizations, shedding thousands and thousands of jobs. Tesla, shedding jobs. Twitter, shedding jobs. Microsoft, shedding jobs. Major chains closing. outlets, number of branches being reduced, being sold off. If one looks at the retail landscape in the UK over the last 3-4 years since COVID, the number of closures that have taken place and the number of jobs that have been lost is massive. And we're seeing more and more effects. You know, I know it's something we spoke about before the podcast, but is the effect of AI. You know, when we had the industrial age and we had mechanization, we saw blue-collar workers losing their jobs on production lines of cars.
Yeah.
The reality is that the jobs that are now at stake in the new business sphere are not the blue-collar jobs, they're the white-collar jobs.
The sort of knowledge worker space.
Absolutely. And there are systems being developed incredibly fast that will put people out of jobs. And how to be able to get ahead of that kind of is really important. At the same time, I think there are tremendous opportunities.
Well, that's where I wanted to sort of steer things to see. Is there hope in this time of people under pressure and budgets under pressure and spending under pressure? Where do you see the opportunity lying right now?
You know, we have to look at things. I'm a huge believer in the pendulum, and that the pendulum swings from side to side. At its apex on either side, it's at an extreme. But what a pendulum is actually seeking to do is to find the balance point which is in the middle, but it never stays still.
Yeah.
It keeps moving from left to right. And what we are seeing, and certainly people of my generation and even the generation that came after me, are starting to see this amongst the newer generations, amongst the X generation and the Zs, the millennials, is that they are living in a very different world to the world that we grew up in.
Mm.
When I got home from school, my parents, my mother would give me a stick and a ball and say, go outside and play. And then you played until it got dark, and then you came home and you did dinner, and then they asked you whether you'd done your homework, and you said yes, although you hadn't done any, and that was the end of it. Today, kids are not doing that. Kids are living in a digital world. We didn't have social media. We didn't have computers. In fact, in South Africa, we didn't even have TV. So we learned to deal with people. The kids today, and you can look at the statistics all over the world. In Japan, something like 30% of all people are not getting married. And are not even in relationships. They are living alone.
Wow.
They work in a digital space. They live in a digital space. They order from a takeaway system that delivers their food. Their groceries get delivered to them. They live in complete isolation of other human beings. Now, that cannot ultimately be healthy. Where I think the great opportunity exists is the building of relationships, because one of the only reasons that the human species has evolved in the way that it has is because of its ability to work together and build relationships. If you read Yuval Harari's book, Sapiens, it is a perfect explanation of how the human race developed. And it was our ability to work as a community and work with each other and play off each other's strengths. One person could be the hunter, another could be the gatherer, another could be the protector, another one could be the feeder. And so we started to work off each other's skill sets to build. But that required relationships. Relationships are disappearing. And I think the rebuilding of relationships and bringing in the actual care for the other human being is where the real opportunities exist. Because as these new generations are coming through, where they have had less and less of that, and their ability to communicate and build relationships is totally digital.
Yeah.
They've never had to hold hands with somebody for the first time. Mike, do you remember the first time you ever decided to kiss a girl?
Ooh.
Do you remember how scary... Yeah.
I still
the
get
thought
flashbacks and of,
okay. Should I hold her hand or should I not hold her hand?
Well, that time the palm is so sweaty.
How do I fit in with this group of other guys who the big ones, who the leaders, who the alphas, who the followers? Understanding the dynamics of that group was something that we did by reading body language, by understanding tone. Now we have a chatbot, we have a bubble. on WhatsApp or a bubble on some chat system that says what it is, and we got to interpret that. We have no way of knowing who's behind it, because it may not be that 18-year-old girl. It might be a 46-year-old bricklayer who's at the other end of that line pretending he's a girl.
You just don't know.
You just don't know. And I think the reintroduction of the human touch is so, so important to any business. That building of relationships, that's how we can differentiate ourselves.
That is so fascinating you say this. And here we are having this conversation in a medium that has seen an explosion of popularity. And I think at the heart of the podcasts as a popular mode of entertainment and information, I think it's exactly what you're saying. You feel connected. It's a very intimate thing. You have this person, and you get to know them over the course of episodes, and they become this trusted, almost a friend. They don't know you, but you feel very connected, and that's why radio has always been so eternally popular, is because it's a very intimate medium. It's at its best, it's talking to one person, right?
Yeah. Well, when you offered me this opportunity to do some podcasts with you, and you said at the time, well, we can do it remote. And I said, no. Because the reality is, this podcast is what it is because we're talking face to face. We happen to have a microphone and headphones and an audience, but it's actually a conversation that you and I are having. If that conversation was on Zoom, it would be different.
Yeah.
I would see your face. I would not see the background because it would have been blurred out. I would not know what's happening around us. I would not be able to read your body language. This is reality, is people talking to each other. And when you look at guys like Stephen Bartlett, their absolute best podcasts are the ones that they do face-to-face, not over a remote screen over different time zones.
Well, I'm glad that you stuck to your guns and made it a plan to do this. What do the kids say? IRL, in real life.
Isn't that scary? That you have to put IRL behind something to define that this is real life instead of the digital world that actually doesn't exist, that we live in. That you actually have to put a name to something of in real life.
All the more important nowadays, because if you are living your life with your face in a screen for large chunks of the day, and now you're starting to see all kinds of incredible photorealistic imagery, a lot of it created by artificial intelligence. And so now I see all of the big social network players are finding their own ways to pick up if a thing looks like it's been altered. They'll label it for you and say, this was created with AI. Don't be fooled. Because now seeing isn't even believing. Well, you can't believe your eyes.
Well, one of the effects of that is one of the staples in social media within our industry has always been the before and after picture.
Yes.
Okay. In Australia, that is now banned.
Really?
No aesthetic clinic or doctor or injector is allowed to use a before and after picture on social media, in their shop front, in their reception area, to do anything. And this is now, regulators have stepped in because A, they don't know, is it real? Was it touched up? Was there AI involved? The woke movement has stepped in saying, don't make people feel bad about themselves. You don't have to make someone feel bad about themselves. If they're not happy with the way that they look because of the reactions they're getting from other people, they already know about it.
Well, this is the thing. So now, where does that leave you as trying to market your business? You have to go IRL. You can't have the before and after poster. You have to have the actual person walking around showing all their friends how they look now, because they've been for a fantastic treatment, and look at their social media to see what they looked like a few weeks ago.
So, you know, this has now happened in Australia, but that's not the only one, because Germany, Switzerland, Netherlands, a number of the European countries are following suit and restricting the use of the kind of media and even the kind of words you're allowed to use in advertising, in social media, whatever.
Now that we find ourselves in this moment of flux and turbulence, do you think it's a foregone conclusion that businesses need to accept that they are not going to be as profitable in the near term for a period while the pendulum is swinging? Or do you think that with the right pivots, with the right adaptability and repositioning, you can still focus on possibly a smaller slice of the pie, maybe a more targeted and more affluent slice of the pie, and still end up on par with where you were last year, or maybe even in a financially more buoyant position?
You know, I think a lot of this goes back to stuff we covered in the first podcast. If your why is all about money, and the shareholders are demanding growth in profits, in dividends, then you're going to be disappointed, okay? Because the reality, it isn't, things don't work that way. Things work on cycles.
Yeah.
If you're in the agricultural industry, there's a time to sow, there's a time to reap. We have 7 years of good weather, we have 7 years of bad weather. Things go up, they go down. If you want a guarantee, buy a microwave. If you want loyalty, buy a dog.
Simple as that.
Okay, because the reality is that these things are shifting and changing all the time. So there is no guarantee that you will be profitable next year. You have to figure out what the dynamics are, and there are years where you will not be profitable or as profitable as the year before. And there are cycles, and you have to adjust your business according to be able to almost preempt those cycles and predetermine what effect those cycles will have. You need to be able to predetermine what those cycles will be. And the only way is to look on the international stage. Okay, when you see the things that are happening internationally, they will reach South African shores.
Do you find the lag time is now much shorter than it was 10 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a simple thing. When I grew up, if a movie came out, you would have heard of this movie and you would wait. And maybe a year after that movie came out, it arrived on South African shores and you could then go and see that movie.
Yeah.
It was normally cut by the censors and trimmed a little bit because there was all sorts of stuff in the movie you weren't allowed to see. But you could generally see that movie. Our only exposure to to what was happening overseas was with imported magazines or newspapers or something smuggled over the border.
There was always a time delay on that.
And there was a huge time delay. The internet has changed all of this. And I heard an incredibly interesting thing on one of these Australian podcasts where they're saying, well, that's all very well. They're now saying that the Australian business is not allowed to do all of these things. What, are they going to stop all Australians from viewing international websites and seeing it on international websites as opposed to Australian websites?
There you go. Okay. I mean, how do you police that? I mean, there's a double standard, right?
It's impossible to, but that lag time, we saw it with fashions. When something comes out now, you know it on the internet, it's publicized, and you want it. The only shift that still takes place is the seasonal shift. If the summer fashion comes out in Europe, it'll be with us next summer because we're not going to get the summer fashion in winter.
That'll hold.
Outside of a seasonal shift, I'm seeing it with, for instance, a company like Amazon, which is launched in South Africa.
Interesting that the big dog has arrived now.
Well, the big dog's arrived, but the big dog's arrived without all of his toys. Because if you go onto the Amazon website, the number of items that are available on the Amazon website are very, very small compared to what you can get on Amazon in the US or Amazon on the UK.
Or one of our South African incumbents like Takealot even.
Absolutely. So they have a very limited stock holding. Now, admittedly, they had to start somewhere, and hopefully that will build up. But it was interesting that when Amazon launched, something like a couple of 100,000 of the apps were downloaded on the first couple of days. But those have virtually dried up. And now people in social media are saying, well, Amazon doesn't have the stuff that I'm looking for anyway.
I'll go to Temu or one of those other Shein.
But there you get suddenly a restriction coming in. So our authorities and SARS have kicked in now that any amount that you're bringing in from Shein or from Temu will be applicable to ad valorem taxes and VAT. Whereas previously they said anything below 500 Rand was not taxable. So all that Shein and Temu did is they said the value of every package was 450 Rand. irrespective of what the value actually was.
Yeah.
And there, a lot of money was lost to the fiscus. But now they've changed those regulations, and they've done that to protect South African businesses that could not compete against that pricing. The effect of pricing on goods out of China and the Far East in world markets has been astonishing.
And has it had its knock-on effect in your industry, even at the high end in medical aesthetics?
Absolutely, because, for instance, we only buy our technology from a company that we can track the entire manufacturing process, the servicing process, the spare parts, the servicing, everything ongoing as a long-term relationship with that company.
There's that relationship word again.
Okay. And that costs money. To provide those guarantees, those parts, those levels of service and response times for an ongoing relationship costs money. You can buy the equivalent machine, and it comes from a site in China that manufactures that machine, but whether you will ever be able to enforce a guarantee or get service on that piece of equipment. So what it has done is we've seen a flood of cheaper equivalents coming into the marketplace in South Africa, lowering the barrier to entry. So there are all sorts of people who are now saying, well, we have a laser. And I'll give you an example. We recently started buying Pico lasers, which is a very particular kind of laser out of Brazil. That laser costs us about 1.6 million rand landed in South Africa.
Wow.
Okay. There are Pico lasers, and I say Pico lasers with quotation marks, available in South Africa at 1/5 of the price. However, are they calibrated?
Mm.
Is the light intensity and the focus and the beam size and all of that calibrated to a level where it is medically safe? I don't know. Will it work with a fluctuating voltage like we have in South Africa? Because we've run voltage tests in many of our clinics, and we're supposed to get voltage at 230.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stable.
It fluctuates between 220 and 245.
And your equipment, if it's not able to accommodate that, could be running unsafe.
Correct. Or you've got to have inverters and power correctors between all of those things, and that costs money on those kinds of things. It's not a like a power inverter that you buy to stop your mobile phone blowing.
Yeah.
Are those service levels there? So we have inferior equipment, inferior products, and I haven't even got onto the fakes.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Because there is, and I use trade names here, brands that we know like Botox, Dysport, which are neurotoxins.
Mm.
There are fakes that are being manufactured somewhere in the world, which are being smuggled into South Africa and being passed off as the real thing.
Wow.
We see it with medicines. We see it with prescription medicines. We constantly see our authorities busting places who have all sorts of medical tablets that they are selling. This isn't only in the case of medicine. This is in the case of washing powder. It's in the case of baby food. It's in the case of many of our well-known brands are being replicated in fake product, being brought in illegally through the customs system and being sold to the consumer as the real thing.
Wow.
But they may have additives or color dyes or elements within their makeup that don't pass muster and could result in problems.
And the risk of causing, number one, just a very disappointing outcome, or number two, serious injury, or we won't even go into all the possibilities that could go wrong when you're dealing with dodgy equipment and or supplies and products. But coming back to this idea of building relationships that I'm assuming are based on a foundation of trust, and that trust is built by delivering consistent results, delivering a consistent level of service and care in a one-to-one, person-to-person environment. And that, I think, is going to set us up for where we're going with our next episode, which is really faced at the customer and knowing your customer and understanding who that customer is and figuring out how to best serve them to build that relationship, right?
Yeah. You know, there's an overused phrase in retail saying the customer is always right. I disagree with it. The customer is not always right, but he is always the customer.
Yeah.
And he's always the guy who's going to decide whether or not he's going to continue to spend money with you. So you've got to bear that in mind. And even when he's wrong, you need to be on the right side of him, because otherwise he will no longer spend with you. What we are seeing is the thing that where I think the real growth of many businesses, where it's headed to, is that of the customer experience. Because so many of us are doing the same thing. And you can look at retail chains in South Africa, and we know them well. We live with them. There are people who deliver that customer experience, and there are people where that customer experience is gone. And it's interesting, if you look, for instance, at Pick and Pay. Pick and Pay was a business that was founded on the relationship between the CEO, and the founder of the business, Raymond Ackerman, who knew his customer, and he cared. And it was built on that and was highly successful. And somewhere along the line, that got lost. Pick and Pay has had very disappointing results for a couple of years. Sean Summers is back in the hot seat. And what is the first thing that Sean has said we have to do? Is we have to rediscover our love of the customer. And they've got to bring that essential thing back, because that business was taken over by logistics and bean counting and issues and HR and processes and protocols.
It lost its why.
And the customer had been completely forgotten in that. They became the collateral damage in the management of that business. And Sean is now putting back that entire thing of, we have got to love our customers. And that's not something that can be done overnight. Romance doesn't happen on the first date. Okay. Well, I suppose it can, and you can get married in Vegas. Will it last? I'm not sure.
Tinder isn't romance, okay?
Yes. The reality is that we don't rush into relationships.
Yeah.
We get to know each other. There's a process. Not only do I need to get to know the person, but I need to get to know the family. And there's probably a drunk uncle who every now and then is going to come along. And there's a crazy sister and whatever. And then I'm going to look at the entire family and the person. I'm going to say, well, the benefits outweigh the downsides. I am now prepared to make my nest with this person going forward. And we will walk through life together. Okay? And it's a scaling and a balance thing.
Yeah.
And if you haven't done that thing and you haven't done that balancing act beforehand, then you get married and then you discover that one of the people at the wedding ceremony or the wedding reception is that drunk uncle, okay, who turns the wedding reception into a complete thing where the families are now fighting with each other. You've got to have figured that stuff out beforehand. So those relationships, I'm carrying it to a ridiculous extreme.
For sure.
But getting to know, if you're going to a person that you're going to trust to use lasers that can toast you, putting needles into your face, you've got to have a degree of trust in this person that they have your well-being and your outcome at the forefront of their minds and not the amount that you are paying for that treatment.
There you go.
You've got to have that trust.
They'd like to see you again.
And I see it so, because of my background, which was the shopping center industry, I am the shopper in our family. And I have always gone into the shopping centers. And I love the shopping experience, not the experience of buying stuff, but seeing what that shopping experience is like.
Yeah.
And it is astonishing in the different levels of service that you get in different retail stores in a shopping center. From people that are happy to see you, that engage with you, and are seeking to build a relationship, even if it's just at the till while you are paying, or people who don't give a damn.
Yeah.
And the reality is that people who don't give a damn don't get return business.
That's the thing.
Because it becomes a transactional thing. And when you can build those relationships with every single client that you have, it can, I'm a firm believer, is that will show long-term dividends.
your business will weather the storms.
Yeah.
Wow, this is a very uplifting note to be ending on. I like to end a podcast like this with a sort of into the sunset, a glow of optimism. You've been catching the latest installment of Renewed Thinking, a thought leadership podcast and a radio feature on Radio Life and Style. My name is Mike Charles. My special guest in the studio with me today, CEO of Skin Renewal, Victor Snyders, giving us more than a few things to think about and to chew on. And Victor, I'm rearing to jump into another episode already. Can't wait to pick your brain and to find out about knowing your customers in our next episode. What do you say?
Great. Looking forward to it.